And then also, we hope to move them on. All right. Welcome to your committee, Representative Hill. And just to start, too, we do have time cards up here. And I think that we had prepared a certain amount of time for testimony from everybody. And what you'll see is that when you see a green one, it means that you're a minute into your testimony, or that you have a minute left in your testimony. The yellow one, and they're not very big, but you can probably see them down here. The yellow one to everybody is the 30 seconds left. And of course, you know, we get to this and it's like, okay, that was the time allotted. So we hope that if you see the red one pop up, you can conclude your testimony at that time. So thank you for listening to the overview. And now we will get to our first bill. Members, if you recall, this bill was heard in our previous committee, but now we do have an amendment, and then we can discuss, have a final discussion of the bill with the amendment. And our intent is to refer this bill to Education Finance Committee. Vice Chair, would you like to make the motion to move House File 1257 before us to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pryor. Yes, that's the motion.
Wonderful. All right. Vice Chair Hill moves House File 1257 before us. And before you introduce your bill, I understand you have two author's amendments that you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape for our final discussion and voting. And so your first amendment is the A1 amendment. Would you like to move the A1 amendment before the committee?
Yes, so moved.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Hill. So the A1 amendment, brief discussion and description of that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Chair Pryor, and it's nice to be back. And as she mentioned a moment ago, we did hear an introduction to this bill last week, but due to time constraints, we're going to revisit the bill again here today. I have with me at the table representatives from Pelsby over at the department, and we're glad to have them here if there are any questions. I'm going to reintroduce Bill House File 1257. Again, it is entitled or known as the Removing Barriers Bill. And I want to briefly touch on five items, and I'll be very brief here as this is a review.
And Representative Hill, the A1 amendment?
I am sorry. Let me speak to the A1 amendment first. The A1 amendment puts in place some opportunities to provide more subs in our classrooms. As many folks in this room know, we've had a shortage of substitute teachers. And what this allows for is ESPs or paraprofessionals to serve in those positions, to sub, and also that there is also some language here about compensation should they enter into those roles.
Mm-hmm. And this is the A1 amendment is to just get the bill in the order for discussion further on. And if it's all right with the committee, we'll take a vote on the A1 amendment to adopt it. So the bill is in the order that the author would like it. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. We have now adopted the A1 amendment. And there is a second amendment, too, I believe, that you have, Representative Hill.
That's correct, Chair Pryor.
And just a brief mention of what is in that.
Absolutely. The A2 amendment speaks to a provision that allows for some of our colleagues in the teaching ranks that come from international destinations. And due to the timelines on when licenses can be reviewed or renewed, there's been some challenges inadvertently placed on these teachers and burdens surrounding their need for work permits, documentation, etc. And so this is a fix for that allows to take that pressure off them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Hill. And again, reminder for the committee, we heard this bill before, discussed it in that form, but now we're hearing it with these amendments. And I'm hoping that our discussion can focus on these amendments that we've just added before we take a vote on the bill. All right, so all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is now adopted. And finally, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair
Would you please introduce yourself, introduce your bill as it is amended.
Very good. My name is Josiah Hill. I'm representing District 33B here in the Minnesota House. And apologies for my haste. I know we want to save as much time as possible for our literacy bill, but I do want to touch on House File 1257, known as the Removing Barriers Bill, regarding Pelsby and the licensing of our public educators here in Minnesota. As I did last week, I'll briefly touch on five components that are contained here within House File 1257. that kind of rise to the top of importance here. First of all, this bill will give an exemption to BA requirements for those seeking licensure in two areas. That would be the visual slash performing arts as well as world languages. The second feature or element I'd like to feature is that it'll allow for teachers with three or more years of experience in another state the ability to obtain a Tier 4 license here in Minnesota. This bill will also address the sub shortage that we have touched on a moment ago. And the bill will also remove the testing requirements previously included. We've been hearing more about this element from our testifiers last week and may again here today. But we'd also like to note here in the introduction that there's been zero demonstrated correlation between the outcomes of such testing and success in serving students and families within our school settings. It's important here is that we may have many concerns around the utilization of the science of reading in discussions here for this bill. And what I would offer is to folks that we are going to be hearing that literacy bill later in today's session. The fifth component that I wanted to touch on was also mentioned in the amendment, and it allows for our international teachers to have a timeline that works for them so that they can have all of their documentation in place to remain here in Minnesota to serve our students. And with that, Chair, I'd like to welcome any testifiers that we have signed up.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hill. The testifier that signed up ahead of time is Caitlin Snyder. And if you would introduce yourself, and I have you down for 2 minutes of testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. We largely support House File 1268 as introduced, removing barriers to education. In particular, we are excited about removing racially biased testing requirements. Just today, I was texting with a member who for 9 years has been trying to pass the MTLE and hasn't been able to, as well as opening different pathways into the classroom for our artists and world language teachers. We did have some concerns on Section 12 of this bill, and we appreciate working with Representative Hill to get those concerns addressed. Just to be clear, the sub shortage hurts our members. Our members postpone medical appointments, they give up much needed prep time to cover for colleagues, and they attend work when they are sick because of the lack of available subs. The difficulty in filling these positions largely comes from the working conditions in schools and the low compensation. We were also concerned about paraprofessionals being told to get a substitute teaching license under this provision. So we really appreciate the language giving protections and barring retaliation for people that do not choose to seek a license under this protection. So glad to be here today in full, unfettered support of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Now we will now move to member questions and discussion. And yes, Representative Mueller, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the amendments to this. I did have a question on the A1 amendment. How do we come up with the $200 a day for our substitute teachers?
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. Thank you, Representative Mueller. This was landed on as a nice round number that found itself in the ballpark of what subs are paid in districts around the state. Tried to take an average of that, but also considering the average around what a daily rate of pay would be for a paraprofessional. And the concern here was that somebody who was serving as a paraprofessional, also known as an ESP, would enter into a subbing role for the day, and in some cases, maybe being required to take a pay cut to do that. And so that was the reasoning behind that part of the amendment.
Representative Mueller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, we've had several testifiers on the short call substitute bill for the last couple of years. And the number one thing that they talked to me about was not that pay was the reason why they wouldn't come. It was the barriers into getting a substitute teacher's license, which is what your original amendment was trying to, or your original language is trying to address. You know, mandating a pay, even though I understand what you're talking about, I know that there's been another bill in, I think in Ed Phi, that would increase the pay for paraprofessionals. So is this equivalent to that? I don't know. But mandating the pay, $200 in Minneapolis may be easily absorbable. $200 in Austin is not as easily absorbable. And so I'm concerned that while you're trying to increase the opportunities for substitute teachers, you're actually taking them away from them. And so I would just really urge caution on this, not because I don't want our subs to be paid appropriately, but because our school districts are able to kind of judge how that is in their area. We have started to remove the barriers for them, and that is something that I think is really important. The only other thing that I would comment on, Madam Chair, thank you for just indulging me one moment. We talked about removing the licensure exam, and you and I have talked lots about that, because teachers are performative-based, and yet in this bill, you remove the pathways that's performative-based. To go from Tier 2 to Tier 3 using 3 successful years of teaching is performative and honoring the experience of the teachers, and yet we can't have licensure exams because we're performative-based. So I'd really like to be able to understand how to rectify this, especially as I have hundreds of teachers contacting me saying they want to preserve pathways to Tier 3. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you, Representative Mueller. We will be hearing House File 1224 at our next session. In House File 1224 is the bill that Representative Mueller that you were referencing that contains the changes to Tier 2 to Tier 3 licensure. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really have to apologize for being late, and I just wanted to maybe ask a question about make a clarification. I'm glad that you added the A1, and I understand subsection F, because what will happen a lot of times, especially in the special education world, I'm a para and with kiddos with special needs, and many times when we'll get a substitute teacher in, that person has absolutely zero training in special education. They do not know our kids, and as a para, you end up teaching the class. So it's super helpful to actually have that section F in there. So districts are actually paying the person that's actually doing the work and having that opportunity for that para, especially para with kiddos with special needs, to step into that role and maybe even see themselves in that role so that they go through our Grow Your Own program, because frankly, folks, we just do not have enough teachers in this area and are in desperate need. So I just wanted to thank you for having that be part of your bill.
Representative Bigberg, and this, if
I'll make it quick, Madam Chair. Just a quick thank you, Representative Hill. So the $200 per day, which would, and we can talk more offline as well, but if someone is filling that position and there's something in their contract already specifying the pay, mm-hmm. or the $200, which would be the... what would school districts go with? Because I could see that $200 being an issue. So, yeah.
And I'm wondering, Chair Youakim, if perhaps this is a good issue to bring up. And when this bill is being sent to Ed Finance, and it sounds like, you know, especially since you can have an offline discussion where you really get into the details of it, but that certainly Chair Youakim will be sure and make sure that question has been answered for you.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bigford. Closing comments, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do have a question also.
Questions,
if I could ask
yes.
that. Just wondering, Representative Hill, so the shortfall substitute component of this is a pilot program, but I don't see any appearance of a sunset or a pilot evaluation, so is that in this bill?
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. A good question, Representative Bennett. I would defer to my friends from Pelsby if they have a response to that. It was intended to be present here. One moment.
And we'll have when you're ready to respond, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. So in the amendment, line 1.113 is meant to add that the entire section of this pilot would be effective for the 23-24, 24-25 school years. So that adds the clarification as well of the pilot period.
Madam Chair, thank you. So my question is, though, it's a pilot. So usually a pilot, so the, I guess get the sunset's probably in there because it's authorizing it for 2 years, correct? But then what about the evaluation of the pilot to see if it's actually working?
Dr. Bailey, further clarification?
Chair Pryor, Representative Bennett. My understanding was that this was going to be a part of the Pelsby Board's work to examine this as the 24-25 school year was winding down, and that they would collect data from districts around the state and charters as well.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'll just give a few closing comments. I get that that's the understanding. I think it should be made pretty clear in the bill, because pilots are important, and we're making some significant changes here to the teacher substitute program, including some concerns about, you know, naming how much they should be paid and so on. I think these are kinds of things that are going to greatly affect the program. We should find out how they do affect it. And to me, the one of the big issues here is that a huge part of the teacher substitute issue is that districts are being micromanaged and their hands are tied on who they can have to substitute and now how much to pay them and all that kind of thing. And we need to trust our districts in this. They know their local people. And it seems to me like we're just going to make it worse. So I do hope we evaluate this pilot. And then the other part of this bill, which I've mentioned before, I just think it's egregious to take out things that show a teacher has been trained in the science of reading, when it is so evident that our students right now are not learning. And it's, I don't believe it's the fault of teachers. It's the fault of a faulty method of teaching reading right now that is causing our students to be way behind. And that concerns me greatly, that we are removing this from reading is like probably the number one thing about teaching that we can ever get to, because it's tied to all other subject areas. It's tied to mental health, it's tied to behavior problems, and yet we're just going to take that away. That concerns me greatly. It's just something I can't support at this point. I appreciate the bill and the work on it, but I have lots of concerns. Thank you.
And I'm going to go to closing comments at this point, Representative. Because we are moving this forward to education, finance, and I think we can have discussion about the points that have been raised. So closing comments.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you for the sharing the concerns, Representative Bennett. As we move forward, this is one of three Pelsby bills that have been heard on a regular basis since Pelsby came into existence, and we will continue to work to refine to ensure quality in these bills, and looking forward to the opportunity to talk more about it in advance of our hearing in Ed Finance. So with that, I would urge support.
All right. Thank you, our testifiers, for being with us again and being here through the next bill, too. Thank you, Representative Hill. And with that, Vice Chair Hill renews his motion to re-refer House File 1257 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
The ayes have it, and House File 1257 is moved now to Education Finance. All right, thank you. Moving on, we have 1268, Teacher Licensure and Teacher Preparation Program Changes Made. Members, it is our intention to refer this House File 1268 to the Education Finance Committee. And Vice Chair Hill, would you like to motion House File 1268 before the committee to be referred to Education Finance?
So moved.
Thank you. All right, Representative Vice Chair Hill moves that House File 1268 is before us. Before you introduce your bill, I understand you do have another author's amendment that you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape that you would prefer. Would you like to motion to make the A2 amendment before the committee?
That would be the motion. Thank you, Chair Pryor.
Thank you. All right. The A2 amendment is before us, and could you speak to the amendment?
Very good. This bill is known as the Operational Excellence Bill, and the amendment speaks to the structure of the Pelsby Board that's being proposed in the bill.
All
All right, thank you. All right, so this is an author's amendment to get it into the form that he would like for discussion today. So all in favor, and any questions? All right, thank you. All in favor of adapting the author's A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is adopted. So now we have the bill in the form that you would like it. So Vice Chair Hill, please reintroduce us to this bill and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Pryor. And again, just to reintroduce very briefly, we did touch on this bill last week here in committee and heard some testimony on it at that time. This bill seeks to provide clarity by updating some of the technical language surrounding the Pelsby Board, and also, after examination, makes a shift to the structure and size of the Pelsby Board, moving it to 13 members. And with that, I would open it up for testimony.
All right. All right, so I see that we have three testifiers that have signed up. And the first that I have on the list is Matt Schaefer. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Pryor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Schaefer. I'm a teacher and the policy director at Ed Allies. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on House File 1268 as amended. We have a couple of pieces of feedback on the bill to share. As the legislature considers adding additional teacher voice to the composition of the board, we would encourage the explicit inclusion of Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers so their unique and valuable insights can contribute to the important work of the board. Lines 2.8 through 2.18 propose a needed, clearer definition of shortages of teachers of color and indigenous teachers. We support this clarification. However, changing only this component of the teacher shortage definition misses an opportunity to improve our state's understanding of the very real shortages facing our students. Our Department of Education, our state licensing board, and our legislature cannot confidently answer this question. How many unfilled teaching positions do we have right now in Minnesota? It's problematic that we don't have an answer to that question. We don't know which licenses have the most unfilled positions, where unfilled positions are located, and whether or not we have more or fewer unfilled positions in the last number of years. The best information we have as a state is the one question Pelsby asks school districts every 2 years for its supply and demand report. Did you have teacher positions that were budgeted for in the last school year but were not filled due to lack of qualified applicants? Yes or no? 207 districts answered yes to that question for the 2023 report, so we know that last school year there were at least 207 unfilled positions statewide. We don't know where they were, which license areas or grade levels they were in, and additionally, only 53% of school districts responded to that question, meaning the limited data we do have isn't remotely close to providing a reality-based view of our teacher shortages. I counted 7 licensed teacher openings in Stillwater today, Representative Hill. We're left to guess, and that's a reckless way to make policy. We strongly encourage the bill author to consider adding unfilled positions to the definition of teacher shortage, a bill that would have done that passed the Senate unanimously last spring. Thank you, Representative Hill, for authoring the bill and hearing our feedback today. Thank you, members of the committee, for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Next up is Caitlin Snyder.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. I would like to speak to you in support of the bill as amended. When the Professional Educator Standards and Licensing Board was created in 2017, one of the last disagreements between Governor Dayton and the legislature was regarding the board makeup. Governor Dayton insisted that any board whose purpose was to license teachers should have a majority of teacher members. The legislature did not meet this demand and instead created a board with 5 classroom teachers and 6 other members. Today, due to open positions, we have 2 classroom teachers serving on Pelsby. This is not an accident. This is how the board was designed to function, to skew heavily towards administrators and their concerns versus treating teachers like the professionals they are. Members, this board makeup is an aberration. There is no other board in statute that is the same setup. For example, the Board of School Administrators has 10 members, 7 of whom are school administrators. The Board of Nursing has 16 members, 12 of whom are nurses. Pelsby needs more teacher members, not just as a value statement for the profession, but for the practical purposes of doing their job. Only teachers can serve on the discipline committee. With only 2 teachers currently on the board, deadlock decisions can be commonplace. Or if one of the teacher members knows the teacher under review, they need to recuse themselves, leaving 1 person in the state determining discipline decisions.
These board openings can be hard to fill, both for teachers and administrators, which is why I laud Representative Hill for bringing forward language allowing board members time off to join board meetings and providing board members with a stipend. As a labor union, we believe in paying people for their time. I also believe it is a good idea to keep the categories of teachers as broad as possible, in this case, metro and rural, to keep the applicant pool large. One of the current non-classroom teacher board members is a teacher prep member. Now, this is not the same thing as somebody who's working day in our E12 settings. However, this is an incredibly important role of PELSBY as they review because they review and approve all of the teacher prep programs in the state. So thank you, Representative Hill, for adding another teacher prep board member to the board, which would bring the board to 7 teacher members out of 13, which is much closer to other boards.
Thank you. And you're certainly welcome to submit written testimony, too, if there was more points that you wanted to cover. Thank you. Finally, we have Nafisa Muhammad. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Pryor, Vice Chair Hill, members of the committee and guests. My name is Nafisa Muhammad. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1268 and to support a recommendation about the proposal for the new composition of PELSBY. I'm also the Deputy Director of Educators for Excellence, Minnesota. At Educators for Excellence, we offer direct advocacy and organizing training to our members, educators fighting for education equity in Minnesota. In this process, we offer them to elevate their voices whenever education policies are discussed. I am also a former teacher and a parent. I spent 8 years at the Minneapolis Public Schools. Again, I'm here on behalf of our members to testify in support of House File 1268 and to offer a recommendation about the proposed new composition of PELSBY. Starting with Section 11, Subdivision 2 in Line 316, our members applaud your proposal to add 2 more members to PELSBY who will be chosen, if approved, among licensed educators in Minnesota. This bill would also add a 3rd teacher to the board with the proposed elimination of the administrator from a cooperative representative, Line 4.8. Representative Hill, PELSBY already has rules about diverse roles in public education system that each member needs to have. I encourage you to align the important steps that you are taking with this bill by amending it to incorporate language that would prioritize having new members from currently underrepresented communities. This does not necessarily mean race as part of a diverse demographic. We need to ensure that PELSBY listens to a variety of voices when debating important teacher licensure and teacher preparation program approvals. Such a change would add much needed diverse representation from the many groups that make sure our state, that makes our state more diverse. Chair Pryor and members of the committee, thank you again for the opportunity to share our members' recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us and providing testimony. All right. Having no more testifiers, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quiet group right now. That's good, though. We keep things moving. Just say I do think some of these changes are necessary. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. When you're expanding the board, Representative Hill, to add 2 more teachers, which I agree with the testimony that the board probably should be made up mostly of teachers. It's a teacher licensing board. But I would encourage you to look at some of the other testimony we heard, perhaps having one of these teachers be a Tier 1 or Tier 2 teacher. And then another group that I can see that should be represented there is our non-public schools. They are greatly impacted by teacher licensing, as we can see by some of the things that are being pushed through our licensing right now. And so having a member be a non-public school teacher, I think, would be also a good thought. So just thoughts for you to mull over as you move forward with this.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bennett, and I will recognize Chair Joaquin, too. She does have a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe it's just a clarifying question for PELSBY. Say that 3 times fast. Do non-public school teachers have to be licensed?
Yes, and if
please respond, but begin by identifying yourself. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Hirschbaugh, and I work at Pelsby. In order to work in a public school, you do not need to hold a license from Pelsby, but many of our, or in order to work in a private school, but many of our private school educators do have licenses.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Closing comments, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. Again, this is a bill that has been heard on a, nearly a perennial basis since Pelsby came into an inception. And I really appreciate the committee's consideration. And thank you, Lead Bennett, for the comments there. They are well taken, and we will continue to consider them as we get closer to our stop in ed finance. So with that, Chair Pryor, thank you.
Thank you. And I do have to say thank you, Representative Hill, for your work on this. You were recruited, I think, to bring people together and try to find the best policy going forward. And I know that there has been a lot of discussion and will continue to be because we have another stop at Ed Finance. So with that, Representative Hill renews his motion to re-refer House File 1268 as amended to the Education Finance Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Motion carries, and House File 1268, as amended, is on its way to Education Finance. All right, let's get resettled here. We have House File 629. Representative Adelson is our chief author. And as you kind of stage yourself, because I know we have lots of testimony to hear again, and the reminders that we will be trying to keep track of the time that had been scheduled. For your testimony, and we do appreciate when people are able to keep to their allotted times. All right, as you know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if your committee administrator can come help my next testifier log in while I'm presenting the bill.
All right, we'll get that set up for you. Thank you. All right. Representative Ellison is not a member of this committee, but we have one of the co-authors of the bill, Representative Feist. So, Representative Feist, would you please motion for House File 629 to be before the committee to be referred to Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would be happy to make motion to move House File 629 before the committee and to re-refer it, or just before the committee at this point.
And then to be referred to
Education Finance Committee.
That is our intent. All right. Thank you. So we have the bill before us, and Representative Adelson, would you please introduce yourself, and then I believe that we do have an author's amendment that we would also like to adopt.
I do. Heather Adelson, I represent Edina and Bloomington. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment I would like to move. It's the DE1.
All right. Representative Feist, would you like to make the motion to move the DE1 amendment before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the DE1 amendment before the committee.
All right. Do a brief explanation of the, well, it's a DE amendment, so let's bring that up.
Madam Speaker, I would be grateful if members of the committee would adopt the DE, and then I'll speak to the bill.
Okay, as amended. All right.
Madam Chair, do we have to adopt the A1 amendment to the DE1 before we? I can't remember.
Madam Chair, we're not going to be.
We decided not to
do.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. We a little bit of streamlining. It was. Yeah. This is enough to handle today. But yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Yuaking, for watching out for us. All right. So we have the DE1 motions to be before us. All in favor of adapting the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like to present it, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The bill, as amended, ready to go. Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm going to be brief with my comments, as I know that we have a great deal of testifiers that would like to remark on this bill today. House File 629, the READ Act, is an effort to take what we know about research, human development, cognitive science, and how people learn to read and apply it to meaningful public policy. This goal is to support our districts and to improve literacy rates across the state of Minnesota, to help every child have the opportunity to read well. Before you are slides that I have provided titled The READ Act that detail legislative history over the past 22 years. Many thanks to our House Legislative Library for their work here in compiling this information so members have context. You should have a handout with MCA reading score data. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that MCAs are not a great way to look at literacy rates, but unfortunately, that's how our state does it now, so I'm providing that. What you'll see there is about 50% of the children in the state of Minnesota, only about 50%, are reading at grade level. So I will also say that we absolutely can do better, and the DE before you is still being worked on. The goal is to continue the work on this language. We are in the sixth week of session. We have a little bit of time. But I want to make sure that we have broad support across the state. There's two changes I want to specifically note for members that we will be addressing in the weeks to come before it gets to education finance, is the definition of reading and literacy specialist, and also adding language about progress monitoring. And right now, Madam Chair, I'm going to walk you through just the bill, and then I'm going to move straight to my testifiers. And I've been aware once they kind of know they're up next, they should be coming up. But the READ Act seeks to remove literacy reporting from the world's best workforce. This reporting requirement doesn't really do anything for our literacy scores in the state of Minnesota. It's just something districts have to do. We don't use it. Districts don't use it. We build and strengthen the local literacy plan that districts report on annually. We're moving that report from July 1st to August 1st. It adds reporting under a local literacy plan, which we're really trying to make more comprehensive. So it adds literacy screeners to be used in the first 6 weeks and the last 6 weeks of a school year. It's the results of the screeners to be added to look at growth. Reading curriculum a district uses would be reported on the local literacy plan. It states that the commissioner must recommend screeners to a local district to choose from by July 1st of 2023. It would also have MDE compile states' local literacy plans that they will be submitting into a report every 2 years to the legislature so that we can look at what's happening across the state of Minnesota, not just tracking MCAs. It adds definitions. Again, I want to be clear, I'm working on some of those. The states and MDE must make available in the bill as well a list of approved science of reading literacy curriculum that would be based in evidence materials that would also include culturally and linguistically responsive materials that reflect our state's diverse populations. It provides literacy grants and also provides professional development funds. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to move to my testifiers. They have come from all over Minnesota and can speak to the importance of our state supporting local districts to ensure that every Minnesota child has a chance to read well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Edelson. We have Dr. Kim Gibbons. Please proceed and introduce yourself again.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. Kim Gibbons, and I'm speaking as the director of the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the University of Minnesota, which also includes the Minnesota Center for Reading Research, and we're also one of 19 federally funded comprehensive centers that provides support to the state departments of Wisconsin and Minnesota around evidence-based practices. I'm not here formally representing the College of Education or the University of Minnesota. However, Dean Rodriguez is fully supportive of the efforts underway in CARI and is always looking for ways to partner with educators to improve outcomes for students. I'm here today to talk about literacy in the state of Minnesota, both where we have been and where we're currently at. Our current statistic in Minnesota is that we have close to 500,000 students that aren't proficient in reading. That is enough to fill up the U.S. Bank Stadium 7.5 times over. And if I beamed every student's picture up on the screen and left it there for 5 seconds, we'd be here for 12 days. While Minnesota, we know that we have the highest ACT scores in the country. We also have the largest achievement gap in the country between Black students and white students. Minnesota ranks close to last for graduation of students with disabilities and last among states for graduation rates of Black students. We also know that poor reading skills impact academic achievement, and they're also associated with an increased risk of not completing high school, death by suicide, incarceration, anxiety, depression, unemployment, underemployment, and problems accessing health care. When we talk about the science of reading, unfortunately, along with having large gaps in our reading proficiency, there's also a gap between research and practice. The science of reading is simply results in consensus from many related disciplines about over 25 years of empirical research about how students learn to read, what goes wrong when students don't learn, and the best type of instruction that works for the most students. It's based on thousands of studies supported by hundreds of millions of dollars of research and challenges older methods of reading instruction that were largely based on tradition and observation and not evidence. The big debate that has been going on for several years, despite all of this research, is there's one side that says if kids know how the sounds and words are represented by letters, reading comprehension will follow, teach kids decoding. The other side says if kids are focused on the meaning of what they're reading, they can figure out what the words say, so teach comprehension. What we know about the prevailing views around literacy instruction, both in Minnesota and around the country, is that there's a lot of myths. And some of those you can see on the slide deck. That, you know, one myth is reading is as natural as speaking, so immerse students in good literature and print. There are multiple ways that children learn to read, so there isn't one set of instructional principles. And teaching young children to look at pictures, skip over the words, or guess will help develop reading comprehension. With the prevailing views, if students don't make good progress, there's typically two responses. One is that there must be a problem in the home. Maybe the child wasn't read to enough. The other is that there must be a problem in the child, that they have a disability. Usually it's neither. Most of the time when kids can't read, it's because they weren't taught explicitly how to do it. So again, the science of reading, a lot of people think that it's just about decoding or teaching phonics, phonemic awareness. It's actually both decoding and word recognition, along with language comprehension skills, which are things like background knowledge, vocabulary, language structures. One of the most research-supported models of reading is the simple view of reading, which is captured in the slide that I have up now. That's often used in trainings called Scarborough's Reading Rope. And I think that what I'd like to say is that there's recently been a great deal of discussion about the science of reading and resources allocated towards professional development. And there's many models of professional development that can be used. But we have to understand that simply training teachers on the science of reading is not enough. Once we train teachers, they go back into systems that often are using curriculum that aren't well aligned to the science of reading. So the teachers are left to try to modify and adapt a curriculum that isn't well aligned. We know that literacy outcomes are improved when we have valid and reliable assessments that can be used to screen students and monitor progress to know whether or not the instruction is working. We also know that teachers need to collaborate in professional learning committees, communities. They need sufficient time allocated to instruction. And the biggest thing is that they need instructional coaching in the classroom to help transfer learning to practice. So in closing, I am supporting the shift to aligning Minnesota instruction, curriculum, and assessment practices within the science of reading. I think our state data should create urgency that we can and must do better for large numbers of students. And we have to remember that the ability to read must not be treated as a luxury, but as a basic and necessary human need that needs to be present in all of our classrooms around the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Gibbons. Next, we have Maria Roberts, who is joining us remotely. So if you're hearing this, you're on. Please unmute yourself and introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Maria Roberts, and I'm the principal at Wilshire Park Elementary School in the St. Anthony New Brighton School District, which is located in Representative Feist's district. It's an honor to testify before you today in support of House File 629. Madam Chair and members, I've been working in public school for over 20 years. That's real. And as we know, our educational systems are failing our students when it comes to reading. I started my career as a special education teacher. When I left my public institution, I was not prepared to teach reading. Although I would be teaching our most vulnerable learners, I was taught how to teach art and music, not how to teach reading. Today, when I ask teachers how they were taught to teach reading, the majority of them say they also were not adequately prepared. However, they're then hired to teach our students. Schools have historically given teachers the what to teach, the books to teach from, the manuals to guide them, but we haven't always honored their professionalism and their own learning by providing them opportunities to learn the how and the why to teach evidence-based reading instruction. By providing both the time and money it takes to help teachers learn the science of reading, unlearn the practices and beliefs that are not serving our students, and offer support and coaching for instruction and assessment, we stop treating teachers simply as implementers and instead treat them as they are, educators. We must create effective systems for our teachers. Leading for effective literacy instruction is culturally responsive leadership. Mm-hmm. Good phonics instruction is important for all of our students. Unfortunately, this type of instruction often only shows up in special education and intervention classrooms. We also know special education and intervention classes are disproportionately filled with students of color. Implementing effective and quality phonics instruction into Tier 1 may actually help us to reduce the number of students in intervention and special education. But here's what's most exciting for me to share with you today. We've begun to provide professional development opportunities, and we've purchased curriculum aligned with the science of reading in our building in order to meet the needs of our students. And we see classrooms filled with joy. Teachers are joyful when kids are successful. Kids are learning to read, and they are proud. Pride breeds joy. Adding phonics has only enhanced our literacy instruction, and teachers have not stopped teaching other reading components, including comprehension. We must equip our students to become independent learners. In order to achieve that, they must be able to read. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us virtually. So we have here in the room Kate Scappel. And then after that will be Nafisha Muhammad, so you can be ready to be the speaker after that. So please introduce yourself and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kate Scappel, and I am the Elementary Curriculum and Gifted and Talented Coordinator for School District 197. We serve the communities of West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan. Over the last 20 years, I've taught from preschool all the way up to third grade. And I've worked as a technology integrationist, and now I work in curriculum for all content areas, my main focus in literacy over the last 5 years. When I was working on my bachelor's degree in elementary education, I was taught how to teach phonics, reading comprehension, even, of course, writing. Not nearly enough training on it, as a number of our testifiers have said, but that's for another conversation. When I started teaching preschool, I was teaching phonics to my four-year-olds to get them a head start into kindergarten. And then when I got my dream job of teaching first grade full-time in a classroom, I was teaching a small group, guided reading group. And as I asked a child to sound out a word, the reading specialist who was there to support me told me to stop. We don't tell kids to sound out words. We use other strategies, like look at the first letter and read the rest of the words in the sentence to try to figure out what it is. And that just creates all sorts of problems, inequities in how to teach children how to read. I was confused by that advice, but did what I was told and what I was trained by them to do. This was a model that was widespread across districts all over the country. It was fun to teach kids how to love books, guess words, and love to read. They'd sit and just read all day long. However, when it came down to decoding difficult text, that's where the rubber hit the road and children started to struggle. About 5 years ago, when it came time for my district, now I'm working in curriculum to review curriculum, we attended the MTSS, Multi-Tiered Systems of Support Conference with Dr. Kim Gibbons, who you just heard from, and we learned that we needed a better way to assess the fluency of our readers.
I'm so sorry, Ms. Scappel, but we have reached the two-minute point, so do you have a closing comment that you can leave us with?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the work that's being done in this bill, I support, and that based on the experiences in my school district, the greatest need is for training, and then as Dr. Gibbons shared, resources so that teachers can go back to classrooms and use them in an effective way to make sure that all kids learn how to read.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing the stories that you were able to in our time allotted. Nafisha Muhammad again. And then after that, it will be Rick Sandstead. So you can be ready to move up. Be standing by, please. And please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Pryor and members of the House Committee Policy, House Education Policy Committee, it's me again. My name is Nafisa Muhammad, and I am a high school English teacher taking a time out. After 8 years of teaching and going on strike, I decided to take a mental health break. I now get to support teachers as Deputy Director of Campaigns at E4E Minnesota, who are fighting for safe and stable learning experiences in addition to safe and stable schools. I am here to share my perspective on this bill. Teaching is an art and a science. It is the reason why I got a psychology degree before getting my master's in education. I emphasize in adolescent psychology and the impacts of trauma on learning because I knew I wanted to be a teacher with insurmountable responsibility of teaching other people's children. I wanted to understand the brain. Specifically, I wanted to understand how children of color who are victims of intersectionality within institutional racism can still learn and thrive. As a Black teacher, I understand the science behind the role model effect. I understand the role cultural connections play in the learning brain. I understand the role of chunking instruction like phonics instruction that is evidence-based and in learning, in literacy learning. I believe in the both and. All children deserve evidence-based reading instruction and to encourage cultural and language applications and training of teachers in these competencies. Lastly, in my new role, I now have more time to be a more engaged parent of a brilliant second grader who is being taught the science of reading by a highly experienced, brilliant Black teacher. I love watching her use the science of reading and the art of teaching to advance my son's and his peers' learning through their cultural funds of knowledge. My dream would be not only do we center science in reading, but the science behind cultural and linguistic connections to the brain in all learning experiences. However, ensuring every child can read while honoring their cultural and linguistic identity is an awesome first step. Learning to read should center the whole child's humanity. It has been done in states like Colorado, and it's totally possible through this bill here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us on this one, too. All right, we have, remotely, we have Rick Sandstead, and in just a moment, if you unmute yourself and introduce yourself and proceed, and then also we'll bring up Barb Dufferin, who would be the next presenter here, and then after that, it's Lucy Payne. All right, thank you. Please
Great.
Proceed.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Pryor and committee members. Thanks for the time to share our experience that might inform some of your next steps. My name is Rick Sandstead, and I have the pleasure of serving the community of Alexandria as the superintendent of schools. I want to share our Alexandria Public Schools experience around our investment in the science of reading. We started our science of reading journey in 2017 with a training focus on our special education and reading intervention teachers. Next, we invested some resources in two staff members who could then become internal certified trainers within our district. This allowed us to expand the training in an affordable fashion throughout our schools. Even through the pandemic, we were able to invest in the development of our staff around the science of reading. This training has allowed us to support student growth and, as Principal Roberts mentioned earlier, increase student joy in our elementary schools through our regular classroom instruction as well as our intervention and special education support structures. For districts like ours who have already invested in training, reimbursement for this expense is very important to our effort going forward. As Dr. Gibbons and Principal Roberts referenced, it's not just about the initial training, but the support through materials and ongoing coaching as well. We know more about how kids learn how to read. We know more about the importance of training teachers and the skills they need to help students be successful. It's time for our actions to follow what we know. Many districts across the state, and you're hearing from a number of them today, have already acted, and we need to make sure that all staff and students in our state have the same opportunities to be equipped with the tools they need. That opportunity is in front of us today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us. We have here in person Barb Dufferin.
Thank you, Chair Pryor and members of the committee. My name is Barb Dufferin, Superintendent of Mattam Udall Public Schools, and you are going to, this is going to start to sound familiar. As a district, we fully agree with the urgent need to change our instructional practices to align with the science of reading. And as a district that has begun that process, we want to ensure that urgency does not lead to rushed implementation with poor outcomes. In 2018, our Education Foundation helped support the training of two teachers in becoming letters facilitators. Our facilitators are now training their peers using Volume 1 letters training, which requires 80 hours of work for each participant and has been likened to a college course. We have put considerable time and resources towards letters training, and at the end of this year, we will have over 50 teachers trained, which represents all of our K-2 classroom teachers and many of our district special education and reading intervention teachers. We are fortunate to be a small district and to have had financial support to start this work. Upon completion of Letters Volume 1 training, a school-based leadership team will oversee the implementation of our literacy program, as well as the de-implementation of practices and resources that are not aligned with the science of reading. The team will provide leadership in auditing and rolling out new curriculum resources, identifying additional training, and analyzing data to identify future needs. I share all of this information with you to help illustrate that the implementation of the science of reading is a big lift, not simply a training. House File 629 will support the work we are doing in Mattam Udall, and I want to emphasize a key element of implementation and de-implementation work is ensuring access to instructional coaching. A literacy coach will be an active link between the implementation team and the immediate and ongoing support of classroom teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have next Lucy Payne on Zoom. On our remote. Oh, you are here. Okay. I mean, I thought you were, but.
I'm here with my superintendent, Barb Dufferin, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Lucy Payne, a Mattam Udall School Board member and faculty member in teacher preparation at the University of St. Thomas. With my multiple roles in education, I've been actively involved in literacy work through the work with the Hunt Institute. This is the first bill that I have seen that approaches literacy improvement from more of a systems perspective. There's not one person, group, or organization that's responsible for the current situation in Minnesota. Each stakeholder has a role to play in the improvement of outcomes for all students. This bill involves many of the key components and stakeholders. And while we appreciate the ideas and concepts in this bill, our experience tells us that we need what is included in the bill and more. We recommend that House File 629 expands the training of the science of reading to all staff, including building leadership, teachers, and paraprofessionals. And the science of reading is a multi-year ongoing process. Time is needed if we're going to achieve the depth of knowledge and impact we desire. In addition, we hope the final language of the bill will fully fund all districts and schools in the depth of training and instructional coaching support needed over time. In order to see the changes we seek in outcomes, we need to acknowledge that learning to read and comprehend text is a complex process that will take time. Training our teachers and others in the science of reading is an important start, but not a quick fix to a complex issue. In closing, we would like to again state our support for House File 629 and its approach to the urgent need to support Minnesota students in literacy. We hope the bill language continues to be refined to address the long-term nature of the needed solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Payne. We're next going to turn to Greta Evans-Becker, who will be here remotely. And then at that time also, if we can have Dr. Justin Killian and Jocelyn Thompson move up to the testifier stand and be ready after this testimony. So Greta Evans-Becker, if you can unmute yourself and join us remotely by identifying yourself first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dr. Greta Evans-Becker, a former teacher and elementary school principal, now serving as the board chair for the Robbinsdale Area School Board. Letters framework training began in Robbinsdale in 2019, and by August of this year, all of our elementary, special education, English language, and reading teachers will be trained. Our teachers report that they are energized and more confident in their teaching of reading because they know they're making the correct changes in their instruction to fill the gaps in their students' abilities and skills. They are seeing these benefits in their students, and the teachers report the students are more excited to read. To measure student progress, our teachers use the FastBridge reading screener 3 times per year. Our Fast Bridge data is showing a substantial percent of our students moving from high risk to some risk in kindergarten. One teacher anecdotally reported to the board last week that her class went from 25% on track to 47% on track with data just from fall to winter with the Fast Bridge screener. Longitudinal data of our first graders who are now current second graders showed that our high-risk students dropped by 14%. The longitudinal data of first graders who are currently third graders showed a decrease in high risk from 21% to 9%. So far, the Robbinsdale schools have invested $567,000 in the letters framework. This is a big investment, and we consider it an important investment in the professional development of our teachers and in our students' learning. I strongly encourage the legislature to fund letters framework training for all the schools in Minnesota, and we hope that when you do so, you will retroactively fund the school districts such as Robbinsdale, who are early adopters of the letters framework. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I make a quick note that we will fund, you know, this bill funds programs that, without naming a specific one, but that I think achieves the goals that our last testifier laid out without naming a particular curriculum. But thank you for the testimony. Next up, we have Dr. Justin Killian.
Chair Pryor, Representative Edelson, members of the committee, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of the educators that make up Education Minnesota. We're here to speak in favor of the READ Act today. I'm here today as a representative of our members because most of them are in their classrooms right now doing the very work that we're here to talk about. So I'm happy to share their message. We would like to start by saying that we think that this bill does a lot of work on curriculum and screeners and a lot of important changes to the way we teach literacy in the state of Minnesota. But we have to remember one thing. We're here today because of a structural problem that all of you have a historic chance to correct. Our public schools have been starved of resources for too long, and the best curriculum, the best screeners, and the best interventions mean nothing if there's no one in the building to do the work. So it's time to fully fund our schools and repair the teaching profession so that the actual instruments and tools that we're fighting for in this bill can actually be used and go to benefit our teachers. We stand in support of the READ Act. We are encouraged that there's ongoing conversation about the terminology. We have some concerns about the actual term science of reading, but those are being handled and discussed among the various stakeholders. We share the concerns that our colleague at the from Educators of Excellence shared about cultural responsive teaching and how it ties into the body of literature that is science of reading. We think the term science of reading is often applied to a very limited body, and our teachers want to see it as one of many tools in their toolbox, especially those that work with multilingual learners. And we look forward to hopefully thinking about what a science of reading might look like that disrupts racism, disrupts white supremacy, and disrupts whiteness in the teaching of literacy. But we stand in favor of this legislation, and we hope to see it move forward, and we thank you for including Teacher Voice.
Thank you. Next up, Jocelyn Thompson. And please
introduce
yourself.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hello, my name is Jocelyn Thompson. I'm a first grade teacher at Friendship Academy of the Arts. What inspired me to become a teacher was the impact that my fifth grade teacher had on my life. Just as he made on me, I want to help my students uncover their passion and help reveal their purpose, reassuring them and encouraging them that they can be anything they want to be if they put their minds to it. As an early educator with minimal experience teaching with phonics instruction, I really appreciate with being able to work with Rose Academy and teaching their curriculum. Because not only was it a structural and rigorous curriculum to follow, but it is very engaging and fun for my scholars. This is super important, especially since I started my first year off teaching during a pandemic. On top of that, I really appreciate the weekly coaching and monthly professional developments that Groves Academy provided to my school, giving me the tools and support to explicitly teach phonemic awareness and alphabetic decoding, and allowing me to implement many opportunities for my scholars to read and write in meaningful ways. This helped really strengthen my understanding in the science of reading, which helped me successfully close a lot of the reading gaps presented in my scholars. This year alone, 61% of my scholars were labeled high or moderate risk in oral reading fluency. This has already been reduced to 35% in January. I couldn't have done this without the support of Grow Academy, and with that, I would like to say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. All right. We have, again, two in person, Tanya Droughton and Cynthia Wilson. And if you can both move up now. And then it will be Kalili Pringle, and we have a student, Jack.
And Madam Chair, yes. Cynthia Wilson from the NAACP had something come up, so she can't be here today.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Well, Kalili Pringle and Jack would be the next two after this. All right. So please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Tonya Drawn, and I'm a community organizer in St. Paul, a proud mother of six and grandmother of 15. Today, I'm here to talk to you about my grandson, who is 10 years old and attends St. Paul Public Schools. He is struggling to read. I run a volunteer-led homework help program at Jenny Lee Rec Center in partnership with JK Movement, where I also provide reading and interventions for children who are, most of them, attend St. Paul Public Schools. Today, I'm here to support the READ Act as a grandmother who is sick and tired of watching kids struggling to read in our community. My grandson is in the fourth grade, and in less of a year's time, he will be entering his last year of elementary school, and he doesn't know how to read at all. My grandson has been in two different schools, and we moved him out of the first school because they didn't feel that him not being able to read was important enough to really put any type of intervention in. I had high hopes for the second school. It was a school I graduated from, an elementary school, a magnet school, and haven't gotten any support from them as well. This year, as I watch my grandson struggle to read, I start to notice him acting up in school, walking out of the classroom because he's frustrated during academic times when his teacher gives instructions to read and to do his work and does not sit down with him to actually read the work out so that he can actually do the work himself. When you read it to him, he comprehends, he can answer the questions, but then you also have to sit there and help him write out the answers so that he can write the questions, answers down on his homework. At home, we are trying as well. I ask the teachers, I ask the school to provide other instructional things that I can do, workbooks, vocabulary, something at home that I can do to reinforce his reading, and it's falling on deaf ears. I did not get any help from my school, my teacher, or my district. As somebody that provides the homework help program at our local rec center, I also have tried to write grants to help kids to have reading intervention at the homework help. They come to us, they don't know how to read well. We're helping them doing the reading, helping them write the answers so they can complete their homework and get good grades so they can pass to another grade, knowing that they're passing without being able to read.
Thank you. Thank you.
I would like to thank
Edelson
for sponsoring this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the personal testimony, and we so appreciate you being here and hearing from you. Kalili Pringle, and then Jack.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kalili Pringle. I am the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union, and I'm here to support House File 629, the READ Act. At the National Parents Union, we provide one-on-one support to Minnesota families as they navigate the pre-K to 12th grade education system. I also co-founded the Homework Help at Jimmy Lee Rec Center. From my vantage point, I see the frustrations as I support parents one-on-one as they realize they have no support when they try to ask for support when they realize their child is not where they need to be. 30% of 8th grade students in Minnesota performed at or above proficient on the National Assessment Education Progress. This means 7 out of 10 of our 8th grade students who just have little over 4 years left of public education career are not reading on grade level. We owe them more. We owe them by adopting explicit strategies to ensure that we are using strong research-based curriculum. We owe them high-quality, ongoing professional development for our teachers, and we owe them the ability to continuously monitor and improve their progress. I believe the READ Act accomplishes these things for our kids. I coined a phrase called Read or Die, and I'm going to read a poem from a former student which convey this phrase. My hand was raised, you looked at me and turned away. Little did I know I wasn't having a good day. So I screamed, I threw my paper and my pencil on the ground. I got kicked out from then on. School to school, I moved around. Now I'm 17, this school thing isn't really for me. The streets are more appealing, till we got caught in court. The cop said he felt threatened. I'm on t-shirts and clouds in a gate that looks like heaven. the look on everyone's face, I hate to see them all so down. I'll watch my mom scream as they put me in the ground. If only I have known my life, I would plead to think this all happened because she couldn't help me read. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Our next testifier is Jack. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Jack. I'm a fifth grader at Bethune Elementary in Minneapolis. I didn't learn to read in my first few years of school. It was really hard when I found out I have dyslexia. The doctor told my mom to hire a tutor trained in how to teach kids to read in a certain way, reflecting the science of reading. I didn't really get what that means, but I know it works because I learned to read. I was taught letter sounds and combinations in a certain order. I grew 3 grades in just 2 years. At my school, most families don't have the money to hire a tutor, and lots of my friends struggle to read too. But we are smart and capable, and we can all learn to read. We just need the right kind of help, and that's where you all come in. I hope you will pass the READ Act and invest more money in kids and our teachers and schools. My mom told me you have 17 billion extra dollars. You should give a lot of it to public schools because it's where the future is made. Thank you to everyone who's worked on this. It matters so much to so many.
All right, no clapping, please. Please, it's not. We actually don't do that in committees, and I apologize for having to say that because we all want to, but we can't. Thank you, Jack, for being us. That was wonderful.
All right, now you can go sit down. I'm going to answer hard.
All right, we are in the section that's public testimony, and so we do have three more additional speakers, and I believe they're coming forward, Dr. Audrey Lensmeyer and Dr. Stephanie Rolag-Yoon. And then our final testifier of the day will be Bobby Burnham. Thank you. And please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Edelson, thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Audrey Lensmeyer, and I'm a professor at Augsburg University, where I teach future teachers. My PhD is from the University of Minnesota in literacy education, and I taught as an elementary teacher in Minneapolis Public Schools. The comments my colleagues and I are making today, and you have a handout that we've put together, the comments that my colleagues and I are making today about policies that will determine definitions of evidence, reading, and how to teach reading are connected to a much larger story in this country where teachers and teacher educators and institutions of higher education are blamed for the stubborn achievement gaps and in standardized test scores. According to Wenzel in 2020 in the Reading Research Quarterly, this targeting pulls attention away from the overwhelming influence of racist and other oppressive practices in schools and society that greatly constrain generative opportunities for teaching and learning to read, particularly learners from marginalized community. This same blame game has been going on for over 100 years. This is nothing new. But now we know more so we can do more. The READ Act can be improved in very simple ways. Do not pit science of reading against all other forms of research and knowledge that has informed how teachers can support learners. I know it feels good to say that this will improve reading scores and it will end the achievement gaps, but unfortunately, an overemphasis in policy and funding will not produce your desired results. Further, the current plan holds impoverished views of teachers and learners. While it overemphasizes certain aspects of learning to read, it diminishes or ignores others. Instead, we might draw on a different model of teaching. I have one more paragraph.
And
I have one more paragraph, Madam Chair, I'd like to finish.
And that takes how long?
It's one paragraph.
Okay, thank you.
Instead, we might draw on a different model of teaching and learning to guide our policymaking. We might want to think about creating a statewide literacy work around a comprehensive vision that includes foundational work such as that of Dr. Goldie Muhammad, who emphasizes that identity, skills, knowledge, and criticality are building blocks for sound educational practice. Notice that skills are not ignored in this model. My colleagues and I would like to support the state of Minnesota. We'd like to support the Reading Act. We'd like to collaborate with this body. We'd like to collaborate with MDE and the union. We can do better, and we welcome the opportunity to continue to work together. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Dr. Stephanie Rolog-Yoon.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Dr. Stephanie Rolog-Yoon. I'm a former classroom teacher, and I teach pre-service and practicing teachers. Similar to what Nafisa said earlier, on my best days as a teacher, I draw on the processes of reading and assessment and the backgrounds children bring with them, the link between reading and writing, and the individual identities and interests of students. For example, I was providing targeted instruction to a small group of third graders who needed reading support. It wasn't enough, as they were still not making progress. In response, I reflected on what I knew about the students. I had them take pictures and tell stories related to those pictures. I typed up these stories to make them part of the text with the strategies. With this shift, they started to feel more confident. They were engaged, and their fluency and comprehension increased. In the decisions I made, I moved from a one-size-fits-all script to meeting the children's needs based on a comprehensive, evidence-based approach to reading. As I connect with literacy specialists across districts that serve primarily BIPOC students, I hear a similar message. The concepts described as the science of reading alone are just not enough to fully support students, and research shows this. They are not enough for interventions, and they are certainly not enough for whole class instruction. In addition, teachers need to consider the context surrounding their readers, what culturally responsive pedagogy looks like in action, the backgrounds and languages students bring to school, and the ability to identify when a specific strategy is helping them move forward or not. In the READ Act, as it is, there is a mention of culturally responsive materials, but the mandated curriculum and professional development that is tied to funding is solely defined around the science of reading, which in fact is in direct opposition to recent research-based recommendations for multilingual learners. This narrows the content, pedagogy, and possibilities that could contribute to overall reading success for students. Further, good teachers want to draw on the vast body of research and knowledge so they can support all of their students. If we limit their ability to do so, we risk losing more of our strong teachers. To reach all of the students and support our educators, please expand the language and action steps of the READ Act to include comprehensive sciences of reading and literacy.
All right, thank you. Our final testifier is Dr. Bobby Byrne.
Thank you, Representative Ellison.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. Thank you, Representative Ellison, for sharing the same sense of urgency for addressing our literacy achievement rates in our state. Representative Ellison and MDE have worked together to produce bills that both prioritize strategies to best serve our children, families, and communities, especially our most underserved children, and address the resource and professional learning needs of our educators in order to ensure our children learn to read at grade level at every grade. We are working collaboratively toward common goals and aligned priorities so that every child is reading at or above grade level every year. Beginning in kindergarten, including multilingual learners and students receiving special education services by ensuring educators have the supports needed to provide comprehensive evidence-based reading instruction by 2025. As you know, the governor's bill is not released yet. Once released, you will see many similarities in H.R. 629 in the governor's language, including the focus on evidence-based practices, educator training and literacy, instruction, reform to literacy incentive aid to support these efforts, and investments at the local level to support implementation. There's a few differences as well, mostly with the governor's approach to targeting resources at the regional level as well. Knowing that educators will need professional learning opportunities as well as ongoing coaching, and the state currently does not have the trained literacy specialists needed at this moment, the governor's language includes a regional approach in partnership with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives to build regional literacy networks that will allow districts to build capacity to implement these comprehensive literacy reform efforts proposed. We do believe the approaches in our Bold Literacy and the READ Act can be complementary. We look forward to working together on these literacy approaches.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. It was great to hear you, hear from you again. So we're not in any committee hearing going to become experts on teaching literacy in our schools. But what we have here is we know that there are people that we can go back and we can ask our questions of. We put down a lot of people that come from different perspectives that can help inform the debate as we have this bill now, but this will be still part of a discussion on our policy bill going forward. And of course, we're going to be hearing it in Ed Finance too. So I know that we've heard from a lot of folks, but I think there are people that we need to have as this common basis for understanding of this bill that we have before us. And so we do have time for member discussion and questions. And Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, may I just make a suggestion here? And I am not at all trying to stall this bill. I think this is an incredibly important issue. Mm-hmm. Representative Edelson has brought forth a plan, and I know where her heart is. We want to get this right. Mm-hmm. We have 7 minutes right now for all of our members should be able to discuss this thoroughly. And we don't have that time. So I would request that you lay this over right now so we can have further discussion as a committee. Maybe some of these key testifiers can be available on Zoom so that we don't call them back here. But this is too important. Reading is critical, and we're in a crisis. And I don't think this bill is being given the weight that it needs right now if we aren't allowed full discussion. So I would just request that we lay this over and continue that discussion.
I'm going to call on Chair Youakim because we were sending this to Ed Finance and where we're also going to be having discussions there to get your comment on that.
Madam Chair, I think it's up to you if you want to take a little bit more time. I know how tight your schedule is, so I would leave it up to you. I know when we get it in our committee, we'll be more focused on the fiscal aspects. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Chair Youakim, for that that comment on it. So I think we can leave it over and continue our discussion. But what I do hope is that, we've had it introduced. We have the author here. We have had the expert testimonies. And if any member has actually clarifying questions, I would ask that we get those clarifying questions addressed before our next meeting when we bring it back, and that when we do come back to a meeting that we actually are saying, here's some policy that we want to look at or that we think needs maybe a different take, and that you would share those comments with the author before we come back again too, and then we'll decide then we can have a public discussion of what the public needs to know about this from our different perspectives. So if we can kind of preface it as continue to do the work, because this is a massively important bill, and we do want to make sure that we have participation and that exchange of ideas and discussion to make it the right bill at the right time, and that all the parts of it are really working. Also knowing that, we have time here in education policy, but that also the time in education finance is going to be valuable also. So appreciate your clarification and discussion on that, Representative Bennett. And I know that we probably can't spend too much time. I mean, there's a lot of time that we could spend, but we need deadlines. Otherwise, we would never get through anything. And, the kids can't wait. We've got to figure it out, and we want to figure it out in this session. So thank you. Any other closing? I think at this point, with just a couple minutes left and knowing that we're going to be laying it over, I just want to turn to Representative Edelson
after this presentation today for your closing comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is Representative Bennett, a very important issue, and I think this is a bipartisan issue that we can actually come to agreement on. I know there's many things that we can agree on, and this should be one of them. And I just want to address, how we've looked at literacy in the past. 50% of kids, 50% of, think if 50% of this room, we decide whether or not you can go on. This half can go on and live a successful life. And you know what? That chance even increases if you can afford private tutoring. That's what we're talking about right now. It's a math question, but we're determining people's lives, young people who don't know that we're doing that for them. So I'm happy to lay it over. Madam Chair, I do really request, though, that we make it a priority to bring it back so it can go to education finance and has time for vetting. But I will have change to it, Ms. Representative Bennett, if you have suggestions or anybody on this committee has suggestions, I'd be happy to work with you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And with that, let me get to the right number here.
629.
Right. And with that, House File 629 is laid over. Meeting is adjourned.